Welcome, everyone. I want to welcome you to our Project First Line, our first webinar of three, and it's made possible from a grant from the CDC, Project First Line, and the Department of Health and Senior Services. I'm Kim Fanning, and I'm with Continuing Education for Health Professions in the Sinclair School of Nursing. I wanted to introduce our first speaker today. Heidi Bitter has been a registered nurse for 15 years, and she's been an infection preventionist for the last 4 years. She originated from Arizona, and in her free time, she loves to hike. She's currently working at Cox Health in Springfield. She has a master's degree in nursing leadership and management, and she's certified through APIC CIC certification. Wanted to let you all know that our session today will give you contact hours. So with that being said, I'm going to turn the program over to Heidi.
Great. Thank you, Kim, for that very nice introduction. I'm happy to be presenting and talking about respiratory droplets. So we're going to be talking about how respiratory droplets spread, specifically COVID-19, but also respiratory viruses in general. We'll start by watching a short video from the CDC's Project First Line, and then we'll have some discussion points, a discussion and reflection point. By the end of this webinar, we'll be able to describe one characteristic of respiratory droplets. We'll be able to cite one primary way that COVID-19 moves between people, and we'll be able to explain at least one reason why infection control actions focus on keeping respiratory droplets out of the air and away from other people. So we're going to be talking about, you know, basically what are they, how do they spread? And we know these are important questions, and we want to be able to break it down and make it easy so that we can learn and explain these to others and our patients.
Hello, everyone. I'm Abby Carlson. I'm an infectious diseases physician and a doctor here at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia. And today we're going to talk about a topic that you hear about a lot, respiratory droplets and how they spread COVID-19. Okay, we know that we want to keep from getting infected with the virus SARS-CoV-2 so that we don't get sick with the disease COVID-19. But how does the virus get from one person to another? The answer is actually different for every virus, but for SARS-CoV-2, the main way that the virus seems to travel between people is through something called respiratory droplets. But what are those? In this case, droplet doesn't just mean a water that you can see, like big raindrops or splashes in the sink or a pool. These droplets we're talking about are actually really tiny, and where they come from might surprise you. You might think that when you breathe out, all that comes out is air, right? You don't see anything else. But in fact, our breath contains a lot of water. And usually you can't see that water. But think about it for just a moment. When you go outside in cold weather and you breathe out, you see your breath. Or if you breathe on a mirror, it fogs up. Or this one actually happens to me all the time. When I'm in the hospital, I put on my mask and my glasses start fogging up. What you're seeing in all these cases is not air. It's all the water in your breath. Those are your respiratory droplets. So every time that we let out air when we breathe, whether we're talking or singing or just sitting here breathing, we also let out those little tiny respiratory droplets. I'll pause here for a moment and say that although all of these droplets are small, they aren't all the same size of small. Some you can actually see, like when you sneeze. Most of them, though, are sizes that we can't see. And different size droplets can travel different distances in the air. Some will go farther than others. The distance they travel also depends on other things like the air currents in the room or how strongly they were pushed out, like when you cough. We'll talk about these ideas more in another episode later on because this difference in sizes is very important for certain things we do in infection control. For now, though, it's important to know that even though these droplets come in a lot of different sizes, they're all small enough and light enough that if another person is close by and we aren't wearing our masks, say we're we're eating at a table or we're with a patient who doesn't have a mask on either, then that person can breathe in the droplets that we've just breathed out. And when someone is infected with SARS-CoV-2, those tiny respiratory droplets have virus particles inside of them. If you breathe in respiratory droplets, they're carrying that virus that can then get onto your nose and into your throat and your lungs. It sounds really gross, I know, but that's what happens. And they can also land on your eyes. And when those droplets land in all of those places, the virus lands on cells. Some cells they can't get into. They just don't have the way in. But like many other respiratory viruses, SARS-CoV-2 is able to get into a lot of cells in our nose, our throat, our eyes, and our lungs. And when that happens, the virus can then hijack the cells. And that's how we get sick with COVID-19. We'll talk more about how exactly viruses hijack cells in another episode, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Now, if the goal of infection control is to keep people from getting sick, and we know that respiratory droplets are the main way SARS-CoV-2 moves between people, then we know that the actions that we take for infection control and that we need in healthcare settings are things to keep people, ourselves and our patients, from breathing in each other's respiratory droplets. I know there are a lot more questions about this topic. We've covered respiratory droplets very quickly today, and we'll talk more about them in future episodes because there's a lot to cover. For the meantime, thank you all for joining us. As always, be sure to follow up on Facebook or Twitter and check us out on our website at cdc.gov/projectfirstline. We'll see you back for the next episode.
All right, so just some key takeaways from that video that I took is people who are infected with COVID can release particles and droplets in their respiratory fluids that contain the virus into the air when they exhale, such as breathing, speaking, singing, exercise, coughing, and sneezing. And the droplets or those aerosol particles can vary across a wide range of sizes, from droplets that we see to being microscopic. And of course, once they are exhaled, they can be inhaled from someone else, and that can infect the other person. I thought it was also really interesting that, just a reminder, when we see cold air in our glasses and that fogs up, that is actually water from our breath. That is our lung secretions, in essence. So before we discuss how respiratory droplets apply to your work life, I'm sure many of you have seen images such as this, and pictures like this make it easy to understand why these droplets matter and why we care about preventing from breathing in each other's respiratory droplets. So this is a pretty forceful sneeze, but if you think about it, if you've ever tried to sneeze and keep your eyes open, it's very hard to do. And we produce a lot of force with sneezing and coughing. These droplets can travel up to 6 feet, which is why we say when someone's sick with COVID or a respiratory illness, we say try to keep within 6 feet away from them. You know, that was our whole social distancing thing. But when these droplets fly out, they also land and settle on our environment. And the environmental surfaces can also act as a vector, and they can contribute to the transmission of viruses. So when the droplets land, they can land on our hands, surfaces, or other objects and contaminate that surface. And then, you know, other people can become infected when they touch that surface. So I found some interesting facts about some of the respiratory illnesses going around right now. COVID can last on a surface for up to 5 days. RSV can survive anywhere from 3 hours to 30 hours on a surface. And influenza A and B can survive for 24 to 48 hours on hard surfaces. I'm not going to get into all the details of environmental cleaning. That's actually going to be in our webinar next month. But it is important to think about, keep in mind that when we're educating our patients and our community, that we want to make sure not only are we teaching them about the droplets themselves, but how important in cleaning our environment as well. All right, so just some questions, and if you want to answer, you can just drop your answer in chat, in the chat box. What is your facility or your area that you work? What are you doing to keep people from breathing in each other's respiratory droplets, or what kind of barriers do you have still? All right, so someone said they're keeping their distance, KN95. So I work in an acute care hospital, but we have clinics, of course, and we do clinics, urgent cares, ERs. So I think about things like standard precautions, where if we encourage our staff, if you have a patient that comes in the clinic complaining of a respiratory issue and they're not diagnosed, wear your mask and goggles, adhere to droplet precautions to be on the safe side. Oh, Sue Schumante said a good Shoemate said a good one, which is ventilation. So sometimes our patients might need negative pressure, but also you can think about things like air exchanges for your room, air filtration, HEPA filters, that's a big one. And there is actually a whole other CDC Project First Line webinar on that as well. Patty says barriers in between cubicles and masks. So I know during the pandemic, we had placed plexiglass barriers between our patients and our admission staff at our clinics. That was one thing we used. Andrea Cook says they're a small health department. They rarely have multiple people in the building at a time. They have a sign on the door, so that if someone's having symptoms, they stay in your car and they come out to you. That's a good idea. I know some of our clinics will ask the patients to wait in their car for a phone call before entering the facility for their appointment, and we always ask to reduce the number of visitors that you bring. Right, next question for the group is, which of these strategies are easy to implement consistently and which are harder to implement consistently? And what would be the reason? When I saw this question, I thought the easiest thing in our for our hospital, for Cox Health Hospital System, is to make sure our policies are updated. So I know as an IP, our department, we only work from 7 to 3:30 every day. So having something on our policy on our intranet page helps those that work on weekends and at nights to have somewhere to go to find information as to what to do when they come across respiratory illnesses. In the chat, some people wear masks, some don't wear masks at all. One barrier is that a lot of people are resistant to wearing masks. And Patty, I understand that because that was an issue. I think people from the pandemic, we were made to wear masks, and people have a lot of like stigma with having to w continue to wear one. And that is a struggle that my IP team faces, is making sure that our staff know it's not just about COVID. There's pertussis, mumps, RSV. I mean, there's always something out there that we need to be aware of and we need to mask against. Someone said with turnover of staff and 24-hour operations here That makes it difficult to keep up with supervision, costs of keeping masks readily available. Some take multiple masks at one time, they take some extras for later. I agree with all that. And yes, we continue to educate and make sure that we have that updated guidance for our employees and staff. So I think teamwork among staff. Another thing that I thought was easy to implement is effect is signage. There's the CDC always has good signage that we can copy. And there's always new signs at for each flu season that you can put up. Someone said in chat, ensure when you hire people, they understand that they may have to wear masks in the future. That is a great, that's also very an easy thing to implement. I love reading people's comments. Bernie says, good hand washing always. Completely agree. That is the number one way to prevent infection. And that is something very easy that we can teach our community members and our patients as well. All right. So, just a reflection question, how can you positively promote respiratory droplet protection at work? And we've already answered that in some of our chats, wearing masks in public, cubicle barriers, hand washing. Some key messages just to kind of wrap it up. Our breath contains a lot of water you can't usually see. And a good education point for when we teach is we can, when we can see our breath in cold air or see our glasses fog up when we wear a mask, that is all water from our breath. Those are our respiratory droplets, and those droplets is what spreads viruses and illnesses like COVID and the flu and RSV. And people who are close by can breathe our droplets in, and they it can land in their eyes. If they touch a surface and then they touch their eyes, they can get sick that way. They can, that's ways they can get infected. I hope that you've enjoyed this short webinar today, and I hope that you've learned something maybe from each other, from our chat. Here are some really good resources for your future reference. There's actually a Project First Line Facebook page. If you're into Twitter, they have a really good Twitter account. And I showed that video. There's actually a lot more videos on YouTube that I absolutely love to watch. And they're pretty short like that. Like that one was about 5 minutes. Then if you want to sign up for any updates or guideline updates, you can sign up for the emails at this website as well.
Thank you, Heidi. I appreciate that information today. It was good exchange with the audience with answering questions and chiming in the chat feature. So I appreciate that. As Heidi alluded to, we have two more webinars scheduled. The next one is on April 29th, and the final one will be 6/6. We as well are anticipating doing a in-person conference later on, and that will be somewhere in between those dates. And as I mentioned, the evaluation link will be sent to the email that you registered with later this afternoon. Are there other questions that people have about respiratory droplets or anything else that we can answer that you're experiencing? Erlene wants to know if you'll get the slide with the email slides in an email so we can use those links. Yes, I don't know why we wouldn't.
Yeah, we can send them out for definitely.
And if you haven't reached into Project First Line website, You should do that because there's a lot of short videos on various topics that you can use for in-service purposes with your staff and when you're experiencing certain outbreaks with particular respiratory diseases or just diseases, period. People are still asking about quarantine rules. Does anyone have a masking policy, when to use them? Those are two questions that are out there in the chat.
I know for quarantine rules, the CDC guideline, the CDC just released updated guidelines for the community, but it doesn't apply to healthcare facilities. So for the healthcare facilities, it's still our patients need to be in isolation for 10 days if a mild to moderate case, or 20 days for severe. And if you're an employee, that it's still the same, a healthcare employee, it's still to isolate or quarantine for 5 days, and then after that, wear a mask. And I believe the new CDC guidelines for the community are you don't necessarily need to quarantine for 5 days, but it more has to do with symptom, with the resolution of your symptoms. So once you're fever free for 24 hours without the use of medications like Tylenol to reduce your temperature, to reduce your fever.
So when you're fever free, in
Yeah,
other
fever
words.
free for 24 hours, then you can do
Is there
quarantine.
anyone who has a masking policy that they would be willing to share with this group? When to use them?
This is Sue Shumate. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I'm driving. The other thing with the quarantining in a healthcare situation is the testing. They recommend the testing at 24 hours after exposure, then 48 after that, then 48 after that. So it's days one, three, and five. That's a big part of, and they don't call it so much quarantining, but just exposure management. So that's a big thing. And then, suggesting masking, yes, recommending it strongly. It's part
Great,
of the
thanks, Sue.
CDC as well.
So it's sequential testing after you've tested positive until you're disease-free or symptom-free.
Well, no, and I'm sorry, that's if you're exposed. Like if somebody had a positive roommate, so then they get removed out of the room, then the exposed
Yeah, you're sort of breaking up, but I think the essence of what you were saying was that.
presumably negative right now. You test them.
So you're breaking up a little bit, but I think we get the essence of what you were talking about in relationship to being positive with the disease and then subsequent testing.
Three times. Sorry.
That's okay. That's right. That's
That's
okay.
that felt.
Thank you, Sue. I appreciate that.
There is not a list of hospitals that have a masking policy anywhere. I don't know of any hospitals that have masking policies other than like mandates. I know Cox Health, where I work, doesn't have masking mandates. We just go by our isolation, the CDC isolation guidelines. And I can share our isolation policy, which has our masking policy in it. I see Greg Sandage is asking, I can share my policy, our masking policy with him.
Perfect.
But we really, it's just by the CDC isolation guidelines.
Thanks, Heidi, for that valuable information on the spread of respiratory viruses. If you haven't already, I'd encourage all of you to access the CDC Project FirstLine website. It has loads of valuable information on various topics, short videos that can be used for in-servicing your staff and staff development. So I'm going to pull up one in particular that talks about respiratory viruses, and I have made a PowerPoint slide that I'm going to be referring to. But here's a summary of some of the recommendations for stopping the spread of respiratory viruses. Using a mask or a respirator to help decrease the spread. You need to make sure that it's proper fitting so that it fits securely above your nose and is not, you know, we've seen everybody who has some people who are wearing masks inappropriately where they're hanging down below their nose, and that's not going to help. So it needs to be above your nose and down below your chin. They're encouraging vaccination, so I encourage everyone to do the same. I know that originally there was a fair amount of vaccine hesitancy and concerns about the safety of the vaccine. Well, we've learned over time that it is safe, and I'd encourage you to, if you haven't, to get vaccinated, because it will help reduce the spread and help with our herd immunity. Practice physical distancing. It's really not social distancing. It's the physical space between two human beings. Whether you're sitting in a waiting room at your doctor's office, you're in the line at the checkout center at the grocery store, that physical distancing will help. And because remember, these are respiratory particles. They're spreading through the air. Practice respiratory hygiene and coughing etiquette. We've all seen people who started this behavior where they're coughing into their elbow. And that's appropriate because it's stopping that spread of the particles in the air. Keep your hands clean. A lot of people say, I don't want you to teach me how to wash my hands again. But the truth is, there's a lot of people who don't do it correctly. Either they don't go long enough, they don't use the right water, they're not using soap, and they're not creating enough friction on their hands. So make sure and keep your hands clean. Clean and disinfect all your surfaces. We're going to have another webinar on that later, and I'd encourage you to join that one to hear about disinfecting. And check on the air handling in your facility and make sure that it's functioning as it should. Environmental services should be able to help you with that. So those are the recommendations that you can glean from this infographic in the Project First Line website. And like I said, there's a ton of information. This is just one little example on this particular topic. I think that will conclude our presentation of today. I wanted to remind everybody about the upcoming sessions that we've got scheduled. And if you are watching this remotely after the fact on demand, you'll receive an email link that will take you to the website, take you to the evaluation and verification of attendance, so you can get contact hours for this presentation. So thanks for joining us today. I appreciate Heidi being here with us.
Thank you, everyone.